being a radio guy, I'm convinced the spoken word remains a powerful means of communicating. And since you're listening now, I'll assume that you too have some value in being informed or entertained by people sitting around talking. Today, though, radio is no longer our sole audio source. For 10 years or so now, a new player on the scene is the podcast. Online, on demand, and as specialized as you could want. Today, we're going to talk podcasting on the radio on Town Hall, Ohio.
This is Town Hall, Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall, Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall, Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
When I'm on the road or even sometimes at home, the radio is almost always on. Old school AM or FM for news, talk, sports, satellite service for music, and on long trips, my wife Connie and I might listen to what we used to call a book on tape. But now, competing for my listening time and yours, is the on-demand audio provided by podcasts. Statistics are hard to find, but by several counts, there are now well over 500,000 podcasts in existence, encompassing more than 18 million episodes, and some 73 million Americans say they listen to a podcast at least once a month. What is a podcast? Why does it work? What makes a good one? We're going to get into those questions today with Alex Hasty. Now, he comes highly recommended by several friends whose judgment I trust and know a lot more about podcasting than me. Alex is an attorney and the managing partner of Hasty Legal. He is active in numerous community organizations and projects, and he is a historian. Alex is on the Board of Trustees with the Ohio History Connection, which we formerly called the Ohio Historical Society. And his very popular Ohio History podcast is Ohio v. the World. Alex, welcome to the original audio medium.
Joe, good to be here.
So we're going to get a whole bunch of backgrounding on podcasting and such, but let's just start with 101 on the assumption that a lot of our listeners aren't familiar. Give us your take on what a podcast is.
A podcast is what I call an internet radio show. So it's a lot like what we're doing here, but anybody can make a podcast. It takes a microphone, a computer, and a hookup to the internet, really, to get it done. And, you know, so there's so many different topics on podcasts that, like you said, 500,000 or more, and there's probably been a few that have been birthed here while we've been sitting here. The podcast is really kind of on-demand radio where you can listen to whatever you want to listen to. So you don't have to listen to the disc jockey, and you don't have to sit through the commercials and those types of things. And some podcasts are better than others. Some are more professionally done than others. Very few still meet the high standard of terrestrial radio. But the podcast is really something that's been growing, especially this decade.
I want to thank you for pulling the veil back on my secret of the past 40 years of my broadcast career. This ain't that hard, is what you're saying. So,
well, it's hard to be good at it, though.
Well, we all try. You do this. Tell us, I guess, on the technical side. We're sitting in a nice studio here that Farm Bureau has funded for us. We've got computers and screens and mic processors and phone modems. Do you need all that?
You don't need all that to make a podcast, you know, especially since the technology and the equipment that is cheap and able to get it has improved. It's nice to have a big board like you've got. You've got an engineer here. I use my MacBook. I have a mixer. I have some microphones that I did pay some, you know, good money for, $300-$400. And those make a difference, but it is really all, for me, it's something I can fit in just a little container, and I take it all over the state with me when I do interviews and shows.
So aside from paying for higher end mics, though, somebody could outfit themselves for what, less than $500 probably.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I'd say if you know, you could just use the mic on your computer. You'll notice the quality difference when you do that, but you could definitely do this for under $500.
You mentioned quality there. I'm with my background, I'm kind of a stickler for a higher level of audio quality.
Sure.
Does that make a difference, do you think, when people are selecting their podcast? Do they care if the mics are processed, or do they care if you just spoke into your telephone mic?
People do care. It's just a perception, really. If it doesn't sound good to the ear, if you're having to turn it all the way up just to hear it, you know, I can notice a difference from my first podcast to the podcast I finished last week. Just as, you know, a layperson, as you get better at audio engineering, you know, and not that I'll ever be great at it, but you can notice a difference just in my own episodes from season one, and now we're starting season three of the show. So you've got to have that quality. And I've had people who've commented, hey, what's going on with the audio here? So people do notice that kind of stuff, because we're so used to listening to these finished, polished products that we hear on the radio for the last 100 years.
So set aside the technical qualities of the program. It doesn't matter what the mechanism, what the platform. It's the content that matters. Content wise, is there a rule of thumb as to what a podcaster has to put on tape? Well, there's my old school back. put on the file and put on the internet, and it will attract people.
I think everything is storytelling. Whether you're telling the story of the news of the day, on 610 WTVN, or whether you're like me and telling a story about the Civil War, everything is good storytelling. Content is good storytelling. The advantage that podcasts have is usually people have sought out your topic. So you kind of have a built-in audience. I know a guy who does a podcast about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Okay, I don't listen to it myself.
It's my favorite.
But he's got, if you're looking up Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on iTunes or Stitcher or some kind of podcast service, then you've already got kind of at least someone who's somewhat interested in it. That helps with the podcast. But again, especially in a history show like we do, it's all about good storytelling. And having good guests.
Marketing. I'm back in the old days, radio, well, they still do it, but, the $50,000 giveaway, listen and win.
Right.
What do you do to market a podcast, or do you just throw it out there and hope people find you?
That's what most people do. And that's what we've done a lot of. It's, you don't have that corporate backing, to go out and get you advertisers. So a lot of times, when we call it monetizing the podcast, how are you going to monetize this thing that you do? Some people aren't interested in that. And it's not something that our show, Ohio V the World's really gone out and sought, but people will come to you. So the best way to monetize it for most national podcasts is through sponsorships. And in that, just like on radio, then you've got to drop a little commercial. You've got to drop a little, a plug here and there. But that is normally the best way. Social media wise, that's how you get the word out. And it's still Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We have all three of those. And really, podcasts, a lot of times, kind of like a good indie movie, they kind of get passed around through word of mouth. And for me, that's always been a struggle. We have a great, giant listenership in Central Ohio, but we'd really love to improve our listenership in Cleveland and Cincinnati, because we talk about those cities and their history just as much as we do Columbus. And so that's been the challenge for us, is how do we reach out, get media, get exposure some of those other markets.
Alex Hasty is our guest. He's an attorney. He is on the board for the Ohio History Connection, and he is the host of a podcast called Ohio v. the World. And we're going to find out some of the stories, some of the details behind some of the interesting stories that Alex has told. But right now we're still exploring a little bit about podcasting. And I know you said you don't do this to make a living. Are there people out there that don't have corporate backing that are making livings, or at least, help them cover the rent or the grocery bill off of podcasting?
Absolutely. Some of the more popular podcasts have, 100,000 listens, a day. So you'll find there's a lot of similar sponsors that are interested in those, but they're getting unique ears that they know are going to hear that ad. On the radio, you can change the station. On the television, you have DVR and other things. Commercials are being seen less and listened to less and less. The podcast listener is kind of already there. They're there. They want to be in that spot. And so there are a lot of people who can make serious money doing the podcast through sponsorships.
You think podcasting, and we're talking primarily about audio, but it's being done video-wise. Have you seen any evidence that people are moving more to that on-demand, specific interest type of information and moving away from old-school media?
I think so, but I think that's not just in radio. You know, and you look at some of my favorite radio shows, by the end of the day, they've already dumped their, maybe split it up by hour or by segment, but they've already put their show into a podcast format. Because, you know, sometimes you're not around to hear your favorite afternoon drive, you know, DJ and show, but you can listen to it the next morning. And that's kind of the convenience of podcasting, is you can listen to whatever radio show you want to at any time. And it's always going to be there for you. So you don't have to catch it when it's on. You can listen to it whenever, and you can listen to whatever topic you want, which it makes it a lot more accessible to people.
I remember I sent you a note to suggest maybe being a guest on the show, and you said you were familiar with it. So we...
Town Hall, Ohio. You guys really were one of the motivations for my own podcast. So probably an episode, I want to say from maybe 2014. I have to go back and look at your archives. But I was getting married to my wife, Sarah, who we call Miss Ohio V the World on the show. She's never been a guest. She's done some voiceover work, but she's never been a guest. And I was looking for, we were getting married at the State House, the Ohio State House, the great people's house downtown. And I wanted to learn some more history of the State House. I could have just done a tour, but I thought in my car, I'll look for something. You guys had a State House history episode. And that episode oddly kind of made me think, you know, why isn't there more stuff like this about Ohio history? And so I searched iTunes, the internet, and really it was I saw that there was kind of a void that we could easily fill, and it was your guys' random State House episode that kind of got me started. So when I saw your email, I was like, all right, I definitely have to do this. I got to pay them back for being the motivation.
Well, I appreciate that. I won't ask you what influence our medical marijuana show has had on your life. Just to be fair to both of us, how much time do you spend on this, Alex?
I guess maybe ask my wife if she thinks I spend too much time on it, but I do season format. So I'll do 15 episodes for about 6 months out of the year, and then the other 6 months I'm either, you know, on hiatus, I guess they call it, but reading, researching, or just doing nothing to do with history. I would say an average episode does probably end up taking at least 10 hours. And we're producing a program that's usually between 50 minutes and an hour and 20 minutes. A lot of that's editing. A lot of that is interviews. You know, I just did an interview about Neil Armstrong, and we drove to Wapakoneta to the Armstrong Air and Space Museum. Right there, driving-wise, was 3 hours alone. And the interview was, you know, another 90 minutes. So it is a lot of times dependent on whether I'm traveling for the show or if I'm just doing a Skype interview. And then it all comes down to editing, and then you've got to cut things out because you don't want it to be too long. I don't go in and pull out all my ums. Some people, you know, they don't like hearing themselves say, and then, so I don't normally go in and cut that out, but I know podcasters who do. I'd say about 10 hours per episode is good for me. I'd like to make it faster.
We will be back to learn more about podcasting and specifically Alex Hastie's show, Ohio V the World, when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
What's the point of the two of us being in a room if we're not preserving it for others to consume? Beyond My Podcast. Beyond My Podcast.
Once again, proving that on iTunes, there's a song about everything. We're chatting about podcasting today with Alex Hastie. He is the host of Ohio V the World, and we're going to dig into that in just a little bit. But before we get too far, you had mentioned a couple of places that folks could go to search for, find, and maybe connect with some podcasts. If I've never done this, how do I get started? How do I find the topic and the delivery system and the podcaster I like?
Well, you know, I'll use the example of explaining how to find my show to my mother, which she was one of the last people I knew to listen to my show. And it's simply, and she likes history. It's simply, you know, she has a smartphone, kind of, but she doesn't. She just doesn't isn't familiar with the format and how easy it can be. So if you have an iPhone, an Apple phone, normally they have a podcast icon on your phone. It's already downloaded. It's already there. I don't even know if you can erase it. If you're looking on, you know, an Android or whatever, usually you can find Stitcher, Google Play. There's different apps that you can get for podcasts. So maybe go to your app store and look that up. Or honestly, my parents normally listen to my show just by going to the website. You know, we have a website, OhioViewTheWorldPodcast.com. Most podcasts have all their episodes listed just like Town Hall Ohio does. And you can go about it that way. So, you know, if you want to type in Ohio History Podcast, that's how you'd find me. I think I'm the only one out there. So we hold ourselves out as that. So I don't know if I have a rival yet. But really, use your Google, use your phone. Most people use them on their telephone through their car, through the Bluetooth, and listen to them while they drive hands-free.
And so you could go to some of these sites where they're archived and then search like you would, you know, looking for a restaurant, or on YouTube,
exactly,
looking for your favorite band or whatever. You just plug in a subject and see what pops up.
The keywords will usually either take you to a title, or all these episodes have little descriptions that are also right there on the page when you click on a podcast. So if you search for, say Mike DeWine, who you guys had on the show recently, it'll show up as, you know, here are all the podcasts that either had Mike DeWine or mentioned Mike DeWine, or Mike DeWine's part of the title. And they would be able to find your Town Hall Ohio episode really quickly.
And just to keep all of our Town Hall Ohio listeners happy, you could also do that same thing for Rich Cordray.
Of course.
Don't get me in any trouble here.
Well, I think you guys had people from both parties in every episode, right?
Yeah, we absolutely have. And it's something we're very proud of, that all of those candidates want to come be on our show.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Let's talk about Ohio v. the World. First of all, where'd the title come from?
I guess I was down in Kentucky visiting some friends. We went to a Kentucky basketball game, and I saw a couple of co-eds wearing t-shirts that said Kentucky against all y'all is what the shirt said. And then I've seen some shirts, Ohio against the world. And really looking for a title, that's really what the show is. Every episode is Ohio versus something, usually some kind of broad topic, Ohio versus war, Ohio versus peace. Our Armstrong episode, obviously Ohio versus the moon. So it gives us a nice way to title every episode. And sometimes the world wins or the topic wins, sometimes Ohio wins.
I read somewhere, maybe it was on your website, that as you were trying to formulate the purpose of this, part of it was to bring history to a younger generation. That comes with the assumption that you may not think not everybody is paying close enough attention to our past.
Yeah, I mean, I think the episodes that I get the biggest enjoyment out of are showing people that, you know, everyone says that this is unprecedented and what's happening is unprecedented and this has never happened before. So many times, if we look at our history, we can find examples of these types of events, especially in the last few years. There have been so much talk about this has never happened before. You know, the rise of white nationalism. It did happen before, and it happened in Ohio in the 1920s. And we talk about that in an episode, and how did people combat it at that time? Now, our lessons from history aren't always, here's what you should do in this situation. Sometimes it's here's what you shouldn't do. But there's so many examples in our episodes where we try to tie what's going on today to things that have happened in the past and in Ohio's history.
Just strictly by coincidence, you mentioned the nationalism in the 20s, and I'm doing some research because 1919 was the year Ohio Farm Bureau was born. So
very turbulent year.
And we're getting ready to celebrate our centennial anniversary. And I was looking through events of the 1919s, and there was a series, I kid you not, a series of mail bombs sent to political leaders. 100 years later,
absolutely,
here we are.
I mean, you know, you're also looking at a time of, the bombing of Wall Street happened at that same period of time. The race relations in this country, following World War I, that's a great time period to look back at, to look at some of the same similarities. 1919 really is one of the most turbulent years in this country's history. It's right up there for me with 1968, and it's right up there with today's hysteria and the, you know, the divides that we have today. 1919 is right up there, and it's kind of this time between the war and the Roaring Twenties. There's a lot of social change and a lot of people fighting any type of social change, and a lot of issues with immigration at the same time.
We're going to continue our conversation and drill down into some of those stories from Ohio's history that Alex has uncovered as he's begun putting together Ohio v. the World, a podcast on Ohio history. Our guest is Alex Hastie, host of that show, an attorney as well, and a board member with the Ohio History Connection. We'll be back in just a few moments with more Town Hall Ohio. Those of you who have something to say have the opportunity to put it out for millions of people via the internet and a way of communicating called podcasting. During my research for today's show, podcasting came from combining iPod and broadcasting, or at least that's urban legend. I don't know if that's completely the case or not. Alex Hastie is a practitioner of the podcast. He's the host of Ohio v. the World and our guest today on Town Hall Ohio. I mentioned in your introduction that you are on the board for the Ohio History Connection, formerly the state's historical society. So were you on that board and got interested in podcasting, or did you get interested in podcasting on history and end up on the board?
It's the latter. They've kind of found out about the show and had me come in. I met with everybody, and I grew up around that place, you know, the Ohio Village, Dickens Christmas that they do over there, the two-headed calf, which was my wife's favorite. And they were just really open to, they wanted to help with the show. Hey, here's a great guest for this. This guy named Todd Kleisman over there, government relations director, who really took an interest in it. And I just started working with them, volunteering and doing some things. And next thing you know, I ended up on the board. Again, that's through an election of the members at the Ohio History Connection. But it's been great, and I really love it. It's a 3-year term.
But having that institutional connection, I mean, I often make jokes that Town Hall Ohio, if it was the Joe Cornelli show, we'd do our best, but we wouldn't get governors and Ohio State University presidents in here every time we turn around.
Right.
The Farm Bureau connection makes people want to be here, and I'm sure that helps with your show too.
It does. You know, they have the task of basically keeping all the archives and sharing the stories of Ohio's history and keeping all these things over hundreds of years. I mean, this historical society started in 1885. I think one of the board members there was Rutherford B. Hayes, was one of the first board members at the Ohio Historical Society. But they've been around for 130 plus years, and their insight into, you know, Ohio history and Ohio stories has been great. But what's really exciting about what's going on with the History Connection is they really are, and maybe that's one of the reasons I ended up on the board as a much younger person than most of the board members, is they're really trying to modernize. And whether that's reaching more people, whether that's being more inclusive just in their content and what they're spending money on. I just came from the Tribal Nations Conference there, the third annual. They've really done a lot to outreach when it comes to Native Americans, who really are the history of Ohio as well. There's a lot of exciting stuff going on at the Ohio History Connection. So I'm really excited to be a part of it. One of my main goals is to, you know, it's been one of the goals for the Historical Society for a long time, is to get a new downtown museum. And that's still off in the horizon. It's really something we're pushing for, you know, working title called the Museum of Ohio. But they have so much stuff, Joe, that people need to see. There's so much stuff in these buildings and archives. You know, I saw something where they had on loan to the Smithsonian President Harding's pajamas, which you wouldn't think are interesting, but they're really nice. Silk.
The folks down there were very helpful to me. One of my all-time favorite moments of broadcasting in 40 years was when we did a show on the 40th anniversary of the Kent State shootings. And it was fascinating to have at the table with me a guy that helped James Michener write his book, one of the students who was shot, and the colonel who was commanding the National Guard the day the shooting took place. Let's get, though, to some of the topics that have made Ohio v. the World popular. Ohio v. the Nazis. What's that story?
Well, that's a pretty easy title. That was Jesse Owens. We had a, and again, the history connection was helpful with that episode, but Jesse Owens, you know, Ohio beats the Nazis in this case, in the showcase 1936 Munich Olympics. But it's really, it's hard to do an hour-long show about, you know, sprinting and, you know, hurdles and the relay team.
Especially when you ran as fast as Jesse Owens.
Exactly. Right, the race is over in under 10 seconds. One thing I really liked about that episode is by the end of that episode, you don't care what his times were. It's really about what was going on, the Great Migration, of how the Owenses came to Ohio. And it's a good example of what we want the show to be. It's Ohio is America, you know, whether demographically, history-wise, it's so, I think it's by far the most emblematic state in the Union of the entire country. And the Owens story has so much history when it comes to how they got here, his story with discrimination at the university, and, you know, he would have to stay in other hotels and things like that. And then his story when he actually gets to Germany and when he comes home. Owens is snubbed by FDR. And he always said that, you know, I wasn't just snubbed by Hitler, I was snubbed by our own president. And so that's a great story, not just about track and field, but really about the politics and racial politics and global politics of the 1930s.
30 seconds. We all know the iconic picture that portrays Owens standing up to Hitler. 30 seconds more on this whole FDR thing.
Well, you know, FDR is should not get a pass for being, you know, a racially sensitive person. And that's, you know, he was a Democrat, and that we find maybe that's difficult to believe now, but that was not something that he was known for. And so when he came to the, you know, he was not invited to the White House when those Olympics were over. Many of the other athletes, the white athletes, were.
Want to know more? Ohio v. the World, Ohio v. the Nazis, Alex Hastie's podcast. We'll be back to hear more Ohio history when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
Tell me a story of days gone by. I want to leave this life of mine. Tell me a story of days gone by.
That's what Alec Hastie does in Ohio v. the World, his podcast that you can find just about anywhere there's an internet connection. We're going through some of the stories that Alex tells on that podcast, and right now there seems to be a resurgence in interest in Neil Armstrong. The new movie's out. First Man, I think, is the name of the movie,
yep.
And you have a podcast entitled Ohio v. the Moon.
Yeah, that was our season 3 premiere, so it just came out a couple weeks ago, and we did kind of purposely, you know, our show always comes out in the fall, but we did kind of purposely time it with the movie's release, and we went to Wapakoneta, one of the History Connection, the Ohio History Connection runs about 60 sites around the state. And the Armstrong Museum is one of our flagship sites out in Wapakoneta, his hometown. And so we went there and met with 3 Armstrong experts, you know, from the museum and from the Wapakoneta area. And really an interesting story. The movie's fantastic. They invite us to a premiere that they did in Wapakoneta, a little red carpet action. And it's a fantastic film. It's really well shot. And I think it's going to be up for a few Oscars when it comes to some of those more technical sides and directing sides of the motion picture.
So we've all heard the famous story about him having to manually override the lunar lander, and it could have gone sideways, disastrously so. That wasn't the first time Mr. Armstrong, Colonel Armstrong, faced some life-threatening situations.
It's not. You know, it sounds silly to say, but you know, I'd love to talk to the director, Damien Chazelle, who did First Man. It's a little more difficult than just doing a podcast about landing on the moon. Armstrong did so many other dangerous things. You know, we had another old podcast about Eddie Rickenbacker, an old Ohio, Columbus, the ace of aces in World War I. And we called it Ohio versus Death because the whole episode was just Eddie Rickenbacker, these different ways he cheated death. Armstrong was the same way. And that's kind of how we told the story was, he's a test pilot. He's in Korea. He's, you know, his first mission in space, Gemini 8, was almost a disaster for NASA and for him. almost lost his life if it wasn't for his quick thinking in 1966. And then all the issues that can come up in a trip to the moon, using these computers that our phones have 10 times the capability of the computers that these guys are flying to the moon on. I still don't know how they did it.
Campers and people, anybody that drives down the interstate will recognize those big silver Airstreams. What's the Airstream connection to Neil Armstrong?
Yeah, Airstream is an Ohio company in Jackson Center, Ohio, near Wapakoneta in northwest Ohio. And we actually talked to they have a historian and a employee who's kind of the Airstream historian. And I didn't know this, but when they landed, the Apollo 11 crew, Armstrong and Collins and Aldrin land in July of 69, they spent almost 3 weeks quarantined in an Airstream. That Airstream had specifically built for the astronauts when they landed. And the idea, I call them space cooties in the show, but the idea was that they would land and they would have picked up some kind of space disease that would wipe us all out. So think about Armstrong landing. He's the most famous man in the world. You know, nowadays he'd be going on all the talk shows and doing all this stuff. He spent 18 days in an Airstream, aboard a Navy ship, just trying not to contaminate us all.
Another of your topics, and we won't get to all of it before we have to break, Ohio v. the 60s.
Well, we met with Bill Shakerty and a professor who's been on the show with us, Professor Steigerwald, an OSU history professor. We talked about Ohio State in the 1960s. And really from 1962, the riots that happened almost the same time, 1970, as the Kent State riots that we talked about. Really cool story to see that change from 1960 to 1970. It's really a generational change when it comes to women, African-Americans, and just, young people in general. So that was basically, we looked at the entire 1960s through the lens of Columbus and through the lens of the university. And it's a really, really excellent kind of roundtable discussion that we had in that episode.
Give me one or two highlights of that, exemplify that change.
One of my favorites is that women basically had to be chaperoned. You could not go into the men's dorm. You couldn't be out past a certain hour. There were certain ways that you could dress that were remarkably conservative in 1961, 1962. And then you take that all the way to 1970, where there's riots in the streets. People say, well, there was a shooting at an Ohio college. No one would have thought that shooting would have been at Kent State. Everyone would have thought it had been at Ohio State. The unrest there was almost weekly. And the unrest in 1970 was really a student strike. My mother was there. I actually interviewed my mom. She was on the show. But the 60s in Columbus, again, so emblematic of the entire 60s across the country.
Ohio v. the Mafia, Ohio v. rock and roll. We've got a couple more subjects we want to get into, and we'll do that in just a few moments. Our guest is Alex Hasty, host of Ohio v. the World, a very popular podcast on Ohio history. We'll be back to talk more with Alex. My gosh, we're about out of time, but we'll have another 5 minutes or so with this very interesting guest when we continue on Town Hall Ohio.
This is the podcast you're listening to. This is the one you chose.
So that's a little signature of Town Hall Ohio themed music. You do what? Book it a beer with your podcast, Alex Hasty?
Yeah, we have an Ohio beer for every episode, and then we have a book recommendation as well.
Alex is the host of Ohio v. the World, a historical look back at the state of Ohio. One of the episodes, Ohio v. the Mafia.
Yeah, so Ohio does have a really rich history when it comes to organized crime, especially in Northeast Ohio. So we talk about the story of Danny Green, the Irishman who kind of takes down the Cleveland mob. There's a movie, Christopher Walken, Val Kilmer, some other actors from 2011, 2012, and we actually talked to the author of that book that was then made into the movie. And it's a really fascinating look at the 1970s in Cleveland and organized crime. And it's, just like in other places, Cleveland was one of the original mafia cities when you talk about New York, Chicago, Kansas City, and Cleveland.
One I want to get to listen to as soon as possible, Ohio v. Rock and Roll.
Yeah, we... Actually, Vince, who's a friend of your show, was one of our guests. He has his own show in the Record Store, musical podcast. And so we did four different stories with different guests. We talked about the Who tragedy in 1979 in Cincinnati. We had a guest who was there at that concert. We also talked about why Cleveland is the home of rock and roll. It seems kind of arbitrary to declare that. But we talked about Alan Freed, kind of the original disc jockey in the 1950s. And then just some other stories from around Ohio, which has a great, you know, music history.
So you told us earlier that you get some help from the folks at the Ohio History Connection, but your listeners, they're not bashful about saying, "Hey, how about this?"
Yeah, that's one of the best ways we get shows. So we try and do 15 shows a season, but I probably go in with maybe 10 or 12. I know we're going to do, because then three or four will just pop up. So we have people email us, OhioVTheWorld @gmail.com, Facebook. People will just send us show ideas, and a lot of times I'll end up doing the research and like, wow, this is definitely something we've got to do. We like to do a little more offbeat history, you know, so we can be the first person to have a podcast out about this.
So we're recommending folks try out Ohio V the World. You do this a lot. What else do you listen to? What other podcasts might you recommend for our listeners after they've listened to all of yours?
After you've listened to all 33 of my shows?
Yes.
I listen to a show called My History Can Beat Up Your Politics. It's a friend of mine. He's been a guest on our show. It's a pretty big national history podcast, but he takes modern day events and puts them in a historical light. So he takes the politics of today and goes back and looks at them, sometimes as far back as, you know, the 18th century. But he's a great, great host, Bruce Carlson. My History Can Beat Up Your Politics. Also a big fan of the show Hardcore History by Dan Carlin. That has hundreds of thousands of listeners. Hardcore History, his episodes are 4 and 5 hours long. And it really is one of the motivations that got me to do the show was Hardcore History. He has a series on World War I that's about 6 episodes that you really need to listen to. It's fantastic.
Anything outside the history realm that...
I listen to some sports podcasts. I listen to Town Hall Ohio, of course.
Well done. Here's your $5.
Thank you. But, you know, it's kind of funny. You guys have all these important government people on. You have DeWine and Cordry and Brown and Renacci, and then you had me on the next week. So you guys have just... You've had enough of the politics, I guess.
Well, that's a service that we provide. It's an important one. It's one we're honored, but... Yeah, I think like everybody else, and I just wore out. I think everybody else has too.
By the time fatigue.
By the time this airs, there won't be too much more to last, at least in this election cycle. We got just a second or so here left, Alex. Tell folks again how to go about, especially those that aren't into podcasting at all. How do they find Ohio V the World?
Just type it into Google, Ohio V the World, or Ohio V the World podcast.com. We've got a website. It's just as easy as you click on the picture and that episode will just start playing. So otherwise, iTunes, Stitcher, any way that you get podcasts on your phone or devices.
And you did that nice and briefly. What about what's the best piece of advice for somebody who says, "Hey, I'd like to try this"?
Well, make sure, one, that you've got some equipment, and make sure, two, that you've got an idea.
Content matters.
The content matters still. So that would be my biggest piece of advice. And if you're going to start a podcast, be ready to, you know, it's a commitment. And you get listeners, you need to actually put out content and make that content worth their time.
We didn't get to talk about your musical project nor your law practice, but we'll do that the next time you're in. Alex Hasty, host of Ohio V the World, our guest on Town Hall Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall Ohio.